You're listening to The Music Show on RN. Ian Grandage is the incoming Artistic Director of the Perth Festival and the outgoing Artistic Director of the Port Fairy Spring Music Festival, which is happening this weekend. He's a cellist, a conductor, a music director, arranger to the stars and composer. And he's my first guest on today's music show. Hello, Ian. How are you?
Good, Andy. Lovely to be here.
We're going to start by listening to some music by you. And this is part of When Time Stops, the score that you wrote for Expressions Dance Company and Camerata, the chamber orchestra in Queensland. But I thought you might set it up and tell us what the project is.
This was a project dreamt up by Natalie Weir, who often, in collaboration with QPAC, does larger scale works because they do it on the main stage of the Playhouse. And I went through Australian Youth Orchestra with Brendan Joyce, and we went through South America and Indonesia together, and with old friends. And he runs.
And
that.
He's the director of.
And he's Camerata. The director of Camerata, and he leads a band of very courageous musicians who went, yes, we'll memorise your score. There's 16 musicians on stage, along with all of the expressions dancers, 8 expressions dancers. So a lot of bodies on stage, but memorising the score and walking around on stage with dancers dancing amongst them. And it was a deeply moving experience, actually, and had a lovely time just having the commitment of those musicians memorizing the score. And there's something that the people just play it differently when they're off the page. There were some very near misses between instruments and dancers, but luckily both sides of that particular equation, they were competent enough to avoid deep injury.
Well, I wouldn't have wanted to be the person who negotiated the insurance on that.
But the central tenet of the show is about the moments where time stops. And so there was a lot of moments of ruminations on birth, death, marriage, falling in love.
And dysfunction, that's the bit we're going to listen to. Dysfunctional, it doesn't sound dysfunctional, it sounds like very good music to me, but can you tell us what's happening at this point?
This is a description of a relationship that's perhaps not going the best. This doesn't feature the entire orchestra. This moment is a string quartet themselves. So I got to play with both the entire band, but also just to give some moments of quietude with solo instruments, and in this instance, a string quartet. Thank you.
Well, that's a portion from Ian Grandage's score for Natalie Weir's When Time Stops for Expressions Dance Company. And we heard members of Camerata playing there, directed by Brendan Joyce, who in fact was playing the first violin part. Ian Grandage is my guest on today's music show. When you go to your website, Ian, it says that you're Ian Grandage is a collaborative artist, which of course is a much simpler way of saying all of the things I said at the beginning sort of sums everything up. But I wonder still whether maybe you're a composer first.
I guess I have this, I've got this issue with ego and the idea that I have something that justifies everybody's time. And somehow that's assuaged when I share that shame with other people. And just go, look, both of us together made this thing that's wasting your time. But no, there's a, I've got a very healthy skepticism about what I have to offer in musical terms. And I find having conversations during the creative process immensely relieving and inspiring, because I started my creative practice inside theatre, really. I mean, I was a classical cello player, and but in terms of creating music, all of that happened with inside the theatrical context, and that is an intrinsically collaborative medium. And so I've just been pondering ever since my WASO residency a decade or so ago, I've been intrigued by this idea of writing collaboratively, of bouncing ideas, being more like a band, but in the classical idiom, I guess, bouncing ideas between a pair of creative minds, and hopefully the result is better than each of you in isolation.
Yes, but I think that most composers who do collaborate, and that is most composers, when they're getting to the end of a collaboration, long to just write a piano sonata on their own at home with the phone off the hook. Do you get that?
Yeah, but I got two kids at home. And so that, I mean, that time, there's a thing, like when you're sitting with somebody else, then clearly it's a meeting, and the like, it's the finding the time when it's far more compelling to sit and play blocks or read books with your children than yes. just to write music for me. So I struggle with those elements too, Andy, actually, in terms of time management. As anyone who's had the unfortunate role of being a commissioner, like, I mean, I have a vexed relationship with deadlines, but it's, but they get there eventually, the pieces.
Yes. Yeah. But I was going to ask about the theatre. I mean, obviously, it's obvious looking at what you have done, which is quite a lot. Nearly all of it has happened on a stage rather than a concert platform, either incidental music for plays, and we're talking things like Cloud Street, you know, famous productions, or dance pieces like the one we just heard a little bit of, or opera. Your big success with The Riders, based on the Tim Winton story, it's as though your music perhaps needs to be about something.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it there. I think, I mean, I feel like I'm a musical storyteller, and that's why the collaborative compositions are a conversation, but just writ in musical form. The peak of the compositional tree is Bach for me, and that's pure abstraction.
Mm.
It's about nothing, but therefore it's about everything. But for me, I need a narrative or some external inspiration for myself to respond to, and that's most direct in stage works, and I'm even trying to drag various theatrical elements into concert works just to help magnify that storytelling aspect.
Yes, but of course, even with Bach, some people, probably including me, would say that the greatest music of all is in the cantatas, and that's certainly about something.
True, of course. I'm just a cellist, so I go straight to the cello suites, don't I? But it's also like where it feels like a very logical progression to go into festival direction, because I see the, as you know, the act of composing is about synthesizing a series of distinct elements into a satisfying whole. I think it's the same thing, but writ large, with greater means, but also the ability to invite people far beyond your own art form that all together can help tell a large story about a place or about our time or sort of more compelling social issues than pure musical gestures can do.
And things happen in festivals, don't they? Or I think things happen in successful festivals that wouldn't happen otherwise.
Yes, and I mean it's those lovely things where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, because you've had there's been a series of events, each of which influences the way you receive the next event, and I think it's those syntheses that are so fantastic, and why festivals in smaller places tend to feel more festival-y, actually. You know, it's very hard to run a festival in London because there's just so much, there's so much noise there, literal and figurative noise there.
That's right. Yes, I remember I was in New York in 1988 and they had the first New York International Festival of the Arts, and it felt pointless, and people kept saying, this is like this every week. Why? There's no difference.
Yeah. The good thing about that, about the new job, is that I get to go to New York in any particular week. You know, like it's, I don't need to go and visit a festival in New York, because clearly there's a great deal happening at any single moment.
But the new job that you refer to, which is the artistic director of the Perth Festival, Perth is a very good city for a festival, isn't it? I mean, it's not as small as Port Fairy, obviously, but it's smaller than Sydney or Melbourne, where a festival can sort of disappear. But in Perth, it takes over the city.
Yeah. It takes it over. We have a successful and very fine fringe that we're working cheek by jowl with, and it's a lot. So, and there's a lovely sense from mid-January right the way through to the top of March that everybody is out. The weather is glorious. It's unseemly if it rains, and it rarely does. But that might be changing. With climate change, we're getting sort of moister across summer. But there's a long and celebrated history of audiences going out across those 6 weeks, and they're far more adventurous in across that period than they are at other times of the year. And so it's a lovely time to be able to program ideas that stimulate.
And it's the oldest arts festival in Australia, isn't that right?
Yes.
It's older than Adelaide.
Yes, and I mean it grew out of a summer school, a summer school program to keep the university campus enlivened, and it's become its own sort of treasured beast. And so there's a wonderful, I'm sure you've been there, an outdoor cinema in the middle of the UWA campus, filled with Norfolk Island pines. That's just one of those places that you go there irrespective of the film. The film's always going to be good quality, but it's an event. The venue itself is an event.
And of course, this is your alma mater, so you know the city, the university, you know the people, probably most of them.
Well, and there's a lovely sense of having been. I lived in Melbourne for 10 years and then moved back before I got the job. There is nowhere better than having a childhood there, and happy circumstance allowed the festival to come to pass. Like, it was really completely on spec that we moved back, but it certainly helped my case.
And your first festival will be 2020. Have you already got far too much stuff in your head to fill one festival?
Yes,
I thought you might.
And so I've nominally done a program already for 20, just to see what the sums would look like, and they're of course horrible, but and then it'll be a slow case of it's kind of like that moment when you receive a commission, like everything is potential at this stage, and it's glorious, and then there'll be a slow chipping away as reality sets in. But I've been working in the arts for long enough to know when to really hold on to the things that matter inside those contexts. And so it's a wonderful team, many of whom are staying on from Wendy Martin's tenure.
Even if you just included the people that you've worked with in the last few years, it would be a pretty good festival. people like Tim Minchin and Kate Miller-Heidke and Meow Meow. And just before we continue our conversation, we don't have a great deal longer to talk, but I'd like to listen to a little bit more music. And this is a song that you wrote with Meow Meow, and we'll hear a little of it. Tell us about Tear Down the Stars.
This is a moment, it's the kind of the 11 o'clock number from Little Match Girl, which was Meow's rumination on homelessness. And it's an ode to possibility, and it's something that it's changed form quite a lot now. So this is a very early version of the song that we then recorded, but it's one of our Meow's and my favourite creations.
That's Meow Meow and Tear Down the Stars from Little Match Girl and her work with Ian Grandage, who's my guest on today's music show. Ian, at Port Fairy this weekend, there are a lot of Indigenous musicians. It's very well represented at this weekend's festival. And not least the premiere of Deborah Cheatham's Yumurella. But I just wonder, this interest of yours in Indigenous art and music, I suppose this began with Corrugation Road, did it?
It did, actually, yes. My first meaningful contact in that instance. And now I'm a little sheepish about my contribution to Corrugation Road. I certainly have friendships that have lasted the entire duration since that in 1996. Just because I felt like I was eager in my working in theatre land to follow the dear late Jimmy Chai's dreams and going, and now we're going to have a bagpipe, and now this is a bit like Gilbert and Sullivan, and now this is like, and so I followed each of these whims of Jimmy, and in doing so, lost a little bit of the nature of Broome that's so intrinsic to a show like Brand New Day. A Corrugation Road was about Jimmy's own battles with mental health, and so I was duty bound to follow his whims, but it ended up feeling like there was too much grandage in those instances, and so I'm now very, very conscious of maintaining the authenticity of any collaborative medium, maintaining the authenticity of any voice with whom I'm working, be it creative or performer.
And there's obviously going to be a focus on this when you finally unveil your first Perth Festival, I assume.
There might be.
Oh, you're playing your cards very close to your chest.
Yeah. But certainly, look, I'm deeply conscious of being a ginger beard in a country not made for white skins. And in my experience on that very first Corrugation Road rehearsal period in the middle of January in Broome, where it was 35 degrees by 8 a.m. and we were rehearsing already, and dear Bamba Albert goes, "Oh, Bobley, you're wrong colour for this country." And it's true, because I was purple and sweating and just very, very English. So that explains a lot of my obsession with Icelandic and Scandinavian art. Like, it feels like, and Celtic music.
And snow.
That feels, yeah, you know, like them. Yeah. They're my ancient stories. Yes. Being a first generation Australian, and these collaborations with Indigenous artists are my request to belong more in this sunburned country.
It's been good to talk to you, Ian Grandage. Thank you very much for coming in to chat.
Thanks, Andy.